Will started 3 years at left guard before being moved to right tackle, where he became an All-American in his senior year. Buffalo made him the 20th player picked in the first round of the 1986 draft. Wolford quickly became a starter for a team coached by NFL Hall of Fame member Marv Levy, the highest paid lineman in the NFL.
We will expect to win every game we play this year. And when you're Sanix High School, that's the way things have always been.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood, presented by Green Remedy. This week's guest is Will Wolford, and Will is a sweet spot guest for us. He hits the Louisville market and the Buffalo market, two of our most popular markets that we've had so far through the show. Will lives in Louisville, Kentucky now. He is from Louisville, but he spent most of his career with the Buffalo Bills, playing in three Super Bowls, making Pro Bowls. At one time, Will was the highest paid offensive lineman in the NFL, and the second highest paid offensive lineman in the NFL made less than half of him. That is absolutely insane. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on stories that haven't been heard a whole lot, some behind-the-scenes stuff, parties at Jim Kelly's house after games, the Elio DiPaolo's tradition that I carried on through my career, which is a restaurant up in Buffalo that we both hold very fondly in our hearts. Many good times there, but Will is a guy that I'm glad I have in my corner. I learned so much from him over the past year transitioning out of ball, and I think everybody listening in today will learn a lot as well. Today's show is brought to you by our title sponsor, Green Remedy. Green Remedy is a company based out of Louisville that I have grown to love. I use their full-spectrum CBD oil products to help with pain, anxiety, and sleep. I have loved using this product, and I love how clean their product is. I have seen the raw materials from the farm, and I was walked through the entire process. I am passionate about getting people off medications, and using an 100% all-natural product like this is so much better for you than pumping pills all day, anti-inflammatories, and stuff that I had to do throughout my career to get by. And now that I'm done, I'm not pain-free, but this CBD oil has helped dramatically and get me off of all those anti-inflammatories and painkillers that are so bad for you. Go to greenremedy.com and use code EWOOD70 at checkout to get 10% off your order, and use the auto ship feature so that you can stay consistent because you will love the results. Again, that's greenremedy.com, code EWOOD70. Will Wolford, welcome to the show.
Eric, thanks for having me. This is great.
Absolutely. Let's start from the very beginning, like we do with most guests. Talk to me about growing up in Louisville, what sports you played kind of through high school.
Oh, boy. I was the youngest of a pretty big family. I have an older brother and three older sisters. And sports were a constant from a young age, mainly basketball. Living in Louisville, everyone had a basketball court in my neighborhood. And a lot of courts would be 8 foot and 9 foot and 10 foot. And we just roamed around. And that's really what we did. I played a little bit of baseball, but not much. And in fourth grade, when my older brother was in fifth grade, my dad said, "You're going out for football too." So I went, even though it was really embarrassing. The first day of practice, they told me to line up at defensive tackle, and I just looked at him because I had no idea what that meant.
Was that when there was like a defensive guard, a defensive tackle? Yeah, we had that too.
Yeah, it was 6'2", stack monster almost.
Right.
So I played football starting fourth grade. You know, back then, you didn't really start any earlier than fifth. So next year in basketball, I went rolling and love sports. You know, I was raised with an older brother who was very talented, very mature for his age. And I had a father who played at the University of Louisville, almost played in the NFL until he blew his knee apart, but he was in the Navy for 3.5 years. He played for the Naval team. And he was a big man. He was Big Mo. He was about 6'4" and probably closer to 400 than 300 pounds most of my life growing up. Very intimidating to most people, but he was great to us. Although when he did get mad, it was scary. So, I mean, I grew up with sports, and I grew up cleaning his bar at a very young age too. He had a bar in town, a couple different ones all over the city, and it was usually the after-hours bar to where he wouldn't get home till 6 in the morning.
Dang.
So my mom would get us up take us over to meet him at the end of his night, clean the bar, come home, go to school. And so other than playing sports, I cleaned his bar. But loved basketball, and football was kind of acquired taste as I got better at it as I got older.
So then you go on to St. X High School in Louisville and then end up going to Vanderbilt. What led to your decision to go to Vandy?
I was heavily recruited as a junior, even though, I mean, in training camp, I broke my hand in half. That's why that's bent. And then a couple games into my season, I broke my leg literally completely in half. So I didn't play much football, but I recovered enough to play basketball. Well, everybody knew my dad was huge, and at that time I was 6'5", but only probably weighed about 220. But when I recovered to play basketball, the offers started coming in for football because people just knew this kid's big and he's going to put on the weight and yada, yada, yada. Plus, when I broke my leg in half, our team doctor, Dr. McAllister, is from Notre Dame. During the x-rays, he's like, his growth plate's not closed. He's going to keep growing, which I was ecstatic. I was like, I'm going to play basketball. Right. Boy, I'm going to be like 6'9". Didn't grow anymore. But, hey, it got a lot of teams interested. So Notre Dame offered, Purdue offered, Louisville, UK offered, Vanderbilt offered, and I had some other schools coming after me. Going to senior year training camp, I catch viral meningitis. And I go from 240 to 210 in literally a matter of days. So I get out of it, and I play. Of course, you know, back then, as soon as I'm out of the hospital, I'm back into practice. And it was a struggle. And it just looked, you know, I played defensive end, so if it came my way, I tried. If it didn't, you know, I would watch, and it looked like I was just lazy and not into it. So a number of different teams kind of fell by the wayside. But at the end of the day, Notre Dame was in it. Vanderbilt hung with me, Kentucky and U of L. And I ended up going to Vanderbilt. The short story is my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, wanted to go to Vanderbilt. So she had already been accepted. Actually, she wasn't accepted that time. She was waitlisted. But she applied to St. Mary's up at Notre Dame and was accepted up there. So we knew we wanted to go to college together.
Y'all were going to be a package deal down at Vandy, like they give the scholarship offers nowadays to a really good player's friend at the time they were giving them to girlfriends.
Sort of.
Right.
I wasn't that quality of player. But I probably would have went to Notre Dame, but it was Jerry Faust's first year. And he pulled the scholarship offer 2 weeks before the signing date. And I was really mad because I gave up playing a basketball game my senior year to go on my recruiting visit. Took the visit. The visit, had a great time at Notre Dame, growing up Catholic in Louisville. I mean, it's heaven. No doubt I was going to choose it. Meet with Jerry after 30 minutes of, I'm not sure what he said because he was so hard to understand. I did understand that he pulled the scholarship. So I was just stunned that quick with 2 weeks to go for the signing date. So it came down really to Vanderbilt and no one. At that time, Louisville's program was really struggling. They were talking about dropping down a level. Kentucky,
who was the coach at U of L at that time?
Bob Weber. But they were literally, you know, Denny Crum and the basketball program was carrying them. They couldn't get many people out to Old Cardinal Stadium. And you're talking, you know, 1982. It was rough.
Right.
And Kentucky, I was recruited by Fran Kersey, who was really personable and nice. And then Jerry Claiborne came in late, and Jerry had a program to clean up. And I'll never forget, I'm on my recruiting trip in Kentucky. I'm with my dad, and we're talking with Coach Claiborne. I mean, again, it's his first year, and they were on suspension for all kinds of different violations. Coach Claiborne said, I don't care if you're 21 or not, in season or not, if I catch you drinking alcohol on my team, I'm kicking you off. We got out of the meeting, and my dad had a bar my entire life. I cleaned his bar my entire life. And I had a beer or two, and he looked at me and goes, well, I guess you're not going to Kentucky. And I was like, and you know, in the first year Jerry Claiborne did, he kicked off almost 20 players. And then he settled down because that was a little unrealistic, and he ended up being a hell of a coach for UK, but he did what he had to do the first year.
Sounds like a guy who I played for at U of L. Steve Kragthorpe, he came in and kicked a lot of guys. Now, they were smoking something. They weren't necessarily for drinking. Yeah, but
it was probably a little more than it was right back in the day. But, no, I ended up going down to Vanderbilt my first year. We went to a bowl game. We were one game away from playing in the Sugar Bowl. Herschel Walker got us down between the hedges, which was a pretty neat experience because I was starting as a true freshman. playing against Jimmy Payne and Freddie Gilbert, two guys who would go first round, second round of the NFL draft. I was getting killed, but we were hanging in there as a team. But we had the lead going in the fourth quarter, 13-7, and Herschel did go like 80 yards and then 70. And they went to the Sugar Bowl that year. So I thought, man, this has worked out perfect. I'm at Vanderbilt, great school. I'm in engineering. You know, we're 8-3. You know, what else can you ask for? And then we never had another winning season there, unfortunately. So as far as the football end of it, the record wasn't that great. But playing in the SEC was wonderful. I played against guys who were first-round picks.
That's awesome. So then first-round draft pick to the Bills. I've already mentioned two similarities in our career, both broken legs in half, both first-rounders of the Bills in the 20s. Then we both come in and play guard when neither of us were probably naturally a guard.
Correct.
And your time with the Bills is so known for being the best left tackle in the league, on the best team in the league, going to three Super Bowls while you were there. But I want to know about the bickering Bills and what that was like early on, because I played on some – bad bickering teams myself.
We, you know, it wasn't like it was instant success there. My first year, the USFL was shutting down. So the week I signed my contract, Jim Kelly came in, even though he was 3 years out of college. Kent Hull came in. He was 3 years out of college. Adding to the mix of, you know, Bruce Smith and some other, you know, Daryl Talley and some other keys to the program, but we weren't there yet. You know, Marv takes over and it's night and day difference right away. But it still took a couple years, and we had so much talent that, you know, we had a hard time dealing with losing. We had a hard time dealing with each other because there was so many egos in that locker room that, yeah, we had a couple rough years. And, you know, 88, we went to the AFC Championship game and lost to the Bengals. And then the very next year, you know, we don't make the playoffs, we made the playoffs, but we struggled a little bit. And guys did some finger pointing, said some stuff in the media they shouldn't have said, you know, violated rule number one, keep things in the locker room, don't air your differences. And and it got kind of ugly for a while, and but I think at the end of it, it kind of made us stronger going forward.
You mentioned Ken Hall, and I didn't even have this in my show notes, but I'd be remiss, me playing center there that long, all the comparisons I had throughout my career there, really upset I didn't get the chance to meet him. There was, when I got to the Bills, I started running around quickly. We had known each other prior, but quickly start running around with Jim and Thurman through Jim's golf tournament and all Andre and these guys I see him at the Super Bowl. But Kent, when I got there, was in bad health and stopped coming around as much. Talk about your relationship with Kent and how special of a dude he is.
I mean, we joined the team back when the team was not very good. I mean, in 86, the year before, they only won two games, and our first year we'd only won four. And we literally joined the team within a day of each other. We were lockered next to each other at Fredonia. And back then, we had three-a-days, and they were full-pad three-a-days, and it was unlimited guys on IR that year. There was no restrictions. So, I mean, our practices were war, and we both got thrown into the mix right away, mainly because of injuries. So Ken had 3 years of playing for the USFL. I had not played guard since, you know, my first year in college. And we just, you know, by default, were together. So we immediately started rooming together, started hanging out together, and went through that first year, which we every once in a while we look at each other and be like, you know, let's just quit. There's got to be better ways to make a living than this.
Jeez.
I mean, I had body splints. I had shin splints and went top to bottom. It was awful. But we became really good friends, and our wives became really good friends. And we, you know, every offseason I'd go down to Mississippi, and probably more than two or three times. And he just became my best friend in the world. And it's a shame that, God, he's been gone 7.5 years now. It's a shame. And I used to tell you, I'm like, man, I can't believe you haven't met Kent. You need to meet Kent. Special guy, great football player, great teammate. Very good leader in the locker room because he got along with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
He had no ego that way. Got along with everybody. But the country strong, you know, couldn't do much in the weight room at all. But get him on the field, he was 6'4", long arms, and, you know, no one really ran him over, that's for sure. Very smart. Would have been a great coach. Because back then they let him basically do everything, call every protection, you know, change it if he sees the blitz coming, read the safeties. He did a lot of things at the center position that you can't trust everybody to do.
I've heard that, and, you know, I've heard Jim say it himself. Kent deserves as much credit for the K-Gun offense as Jim does, and one of the biggest regrets from my career is we played in the Hall of Fame game a second time later in my career, and I should have wore the number 67 in that game to give Kent a little push for the Hall and to honor him, and I didn't even think about it. I don't even know if anyone was wearing that number at the time, and I literally thought about it maybe midway through the game and told the equipment guys, and they're like, man, that would have been really special for a really great dude, and I really regret that. And so we talked on the Bickering Bills. Well, then you guys get rolling, and that's all documented, how many games y'all won and how successful on offense and the big games and the comeback and all that. My favorite part is sitting around at Jim's golf tournament, listening to you all get together and talk about, get done with the games, go to Elio's, go to Jim's. How much fun were you all having during that run?
It was just it was pure magic for especially the way my career started off, where we could not win, and it was just torture. To all of a sudden now, I mean, we my last 5 years in Buffalo, we did not lose a home game that mattered. So, I mean, the team coming in, they pretty much knew they were getting beat. We would win, and you're right, we'd go straight over to Elio's. And back then, more than half the team would go to Elio's with their families. We had that whole back room. It was like a giant wedding reception every game afterwards, which was always special and great for the people who would come visit you. As you know, you have different family people coming all the time, and going to Elio's and then going to Jim's house for the party. And Jim's basement was a nightclub. I mean, it was huge. And, you know, that was the routine every single game, but it was awesome. And every once in a while we would go out after Jim's, but not much. I lived right around the corner from him. So it was good. And, Jim's parties were legendary. I mean, it was, you know, you walk in, there's John Candy and there's some other actor, wow, actresses and whatever. And I remember when OJ used to come around quite a bit, and my friends would hang out with those guys, and Bob Costas, he would be in there, and, you know, it was just, but it was the most laid back, casual atmosphere too. So no one had bodyguards or anything. And it was pretty cool. And you know, Jim Kelly and Bruce Smith and all those guys, they were rock stars back in the day. So people wanted to be a part of it. They came.
That's incredible. I heard those stories, and then I tried to get it going. And for my last probably 7 years of my career, we went to Elio's after every home game. You were there for a lot of them. Once you stopped coaching high school ball, you got to come to even more games. And we would go to Elio's, and then either we'd go to my basement, or towards the end, once our kids were little and our house was small, we would just stay up at Elio's, and they'd kind of lock the door, and we'd have our own private party up there, and it was awesome. But what's unique about Buffalo, and what I try to tell everybody when they come there, how special it is we don't live 45 minutes to an hour away from each other like they do in big cities. And there's no traffic. You know, once that game day traffic gets out, you can get anywhere you want to in the city in 20 minutes, and most of us live 10 minutes away. So it's a special deal where everybody can kind of get together and makes it fun.
No doubt about it. Plus, back then, I'm not condoning this, but you could drink and drive back then, and it wasn't a big deal. We literally would get pulled over. I never drove, so Ken always drove. And Ken would get pulled over, and the cop would be like, "Hey, Mr. Hull, how you doing?" Ken'd be like, "I'm good." He's like, "Listen, you're swerving a little bit, so if you wouldn't mind, where are you going?" And he'd be like, I'm taking Wolford home." He's like, "All right, if you don't mind, just follow in behind me, okay? I'll drive you there." And we'd drive him and get him home. But, we didn't do it. We went from there, went to the Big Tree Inn a lot. I literally probably spent 1,000 nights in the Big Tree Inn. And we didn't venture much outside of that little triangle there. We didn't do, you know, Elio's, Jim's, Big Tree. That's all I pretty much went to.
It's funny. 20 years later, I'm playing there, and we frequent the Big Tree and Elio's. Instead of Jim's house, it was my house. It's funny how the times change in Buffalo, but it's all the similar faces. And that's what's so fun about being up there and getting around all those guys. All those restaurant owners, they take care of you. I wasn't drinking and driving, but one of my buddies could never get over the fact that one morning I'm trying to drive him and his wife and his baby to the airport, and we're going to be late. I've never driven out of Orchard Park at 7 a.m. because I'm always in Orchard Park at the stadium. So I'm going up the 90, hit traffic. So I kind of start swerving traffic, trying to get in and out to get them to make their flight. They're heading back to Louisville on a Monday morning, and a cop pulls me over for reckless driving. And he comes up and he says, "Do you know what you're doing? You know, you can't be doing that. You know how dangerous that is? You have a kid in the car." And he looks at me and he said, "Eric, that was a heck of a win yesterday. Let me hold traffic for you so you can get going quicker." And my buddy could not believe it. He's like, "Dude, they would have thrown me in jail and they just let you go." And I said, "I've gotten more speeding tickets than I've been out of up here, but that came in very clutch that morning and they made their flight." But so you go on for Buffalo, you sign this awesome deal in Indianapolis, finish your career in Pittsburgh. What ultimately led you to want to retire? And talk to me about that first year transitioning out.
My last year in Pittsburgh, we go into it's my third year in Pitt. And because of free agency, I get moved to left tackle, which I hadn't played since Indy. And I got to play 2 years of guard in Pittsburgh between Damari Dawson and John Jackson, a guy I knew from Eastern Kentucky. It was the easiest 2 years of my career. It was wonderful. Well, I got moved back out to left tackle. We're preseason Super Bowl favorites going into that year, and the season just did not go well. We ended up winning about six games, and it was just really tough. It was Cordell Stewart's second year as a starter. The previous year, we lost in the AFC Championship game to Denver, and Cordell had a breakout season. He was wonderful. It was great. But Chan Gailey was his quarterback's coach. Well, we did so well that Dallas hired Chan Gailey away as head coach. And it just wasn't – if that doesn't happen, I swear Cordell's a household name and everybody knows it. My opinion, Chan Lee even had a lot to do with it, and we just weren't the same on offense, weren't the same on the team. I ended up tearing a pec muscle midseason. So I take 3 weeks off, another week for the bye, come back, play with a brace. And at the end of that season, Bill Cowher made me a really nice offer to not retire, but I was not going to have pec surgery because it's so brutal, the rehab, not for just 1 or 2 years to play football. And I already had my rotator cuff surgery on both shoulders. So I was truly at a point where I could not play better. I was only going to play worse, and I was probably going to play a lot worse. So, you know, I walked.
Takes a big man to admit that.
It was an easy decision. I mean, when you don't have a pec muscle, it's one thing to play with shoulders that are screwed up, but that was so painful, and it was just not going to get any better. So, you know, I walked away, and I felt real good about doing it. I played a long time. Other than not winning the Super Bowl, which really kept me in it the last year in Pittsburgh, but then it was so disappointing that, I mean, you're Super Bowl preseason favorites, and you win six games, and boy, Bill Cowher didn't handle it very well. I mean, he was all of a sudden, he's taking over the offensive meetings. He's, you know, and he's a defensive coordinator by trade. And all of a sudden, he's in the offensive meetings, and he's, you know, making decisions and whatnot and running on our meetings, and it was just – It was just not a good year. So it was easy to you know, walk away from the league at that time. I had already settled. And when I played in Pittsburgh, we were coming home in the offseason to Louisville. I was having to have my third child at that time. So, you know, it was easy just to walk away. Because up until that point, I lived in Buffalo 7 years year-round. I lived in Indy 3 years year-round. So, you know, we already had a place to come to and do it. But to say it was easy to transition out of the NFL is an understatement and a half. And we've talked many times about that, especially the first year. Mm-hmm. You just miss that schedule. And during the season, every year I would play, and by the end of the year I'd be so beat up that I'm like, all right, I was lucky that we played in the playoffs most of the time. All right, if we win, great. We move on, hopefully win a Super Bowl. If we don't, at least I'm not going to get beat up anymore because my body's falling apart and I'm so sore. And I can't wait for the off season. I'm just going to sleep for a month, heal up, and start over. You get to the off season. One day into it, you can't sleep because you're bored. Your schedule's gone, and it was horrible.
Right.
Well, then all of a sudden that happens permanent. And it's tough. It's really tough. So you got to stay busy. You got to find your schedule. You got to find something you can hang your hat on. And, you know, at that time with the kids, that was – that was easy to get into. But then again, I knew I was not going to be a stay-at-home dad.
Right.
I mean, I knew that much. And to all the women out there who've raised children, that's the hardest job in the world. It's completely thankless. It's 24/7. Those kids have nothing to do but wear you out and get your attention, and it is not easy. And to my wife's credit, she was an attorney, and she gave up her law career to raise our children. I was very thankful for that, because it probably would have been a lot easier for her to continue as an attorney and not a stay-at-home mom. But we both thought it was very important she do that, and she did. But I knew I couldn't do it.
You've given me a lot of advice over the years on investment opportunities. Guys that are transitioning out want to get right into an investment, and they want to get that competitive fix in the business world. You dabbled in some ventures, some investments. What advice can you give those guys?
Be careful. You know, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. If you get into something business-wise, make sure you're the one doing it. Avoid startups. You know, some people will bring a startup to you about how great it's going to be and what kind of return it's going to give you. Startups are 30 to 1 shots. So, you know, if it's not going to give you 30 to 1, don't put your money into it.
And every pro forma looks good.
Yeah, they all look good. And there's a reason why they're asking you for your money, though. If it's so good, what do you need my money for? Just be careful. I did a number of different things, and I kept myself real busy. But it was mostly good, bad, and ugly. And if I had to do it all over again, I probably wouldn't have done any of them. But I had to do something.
Right.
So eventually, I end up getting into radio. And I knew I was going to have an opportunity with the Colts after a couple years of being retired to start doing their pregame, postgame show. And then eventually, if Ted Marchibroda retired, I would do the color on the radio. So I started doing the Bob and Will show with Bob Valvano. And it was awesome. I loved radio from the very beginning, and did that for a number of years. Did the Bob and Will show from probably 2002 to 2009. And started doing Colts radio, I think, in 2003, and then went on to start traveling with the team in 2007. And that was good. That was appetizing. That was satisfying. That was, you know, took care of that competitive itch. Eventually, you know, things worked out really well, but it took a while.
You were kind of the glue. I mean, you get to the Bills, that's their best run. That's probably Indy's best run that you were a part of.
It was pretty fun. You know, we played with, you know, Jim Harbaugh came in late and played on a team that almost got to the Super Bowl, lost to the Steelers on the road in the AFC Championship game, my third year in Indy. We're 9-7 and barely sneak into the playoffs. The last week of the season, we need to win. We need three teams to lose, and they do. So we get in. We go to San Diego, first game. They had played in the Super Bowl the year before, and they were favored by 14, but yet we blew them out. Then we go to Kansas City. They're the one seed. I think they were 14-2. They had a Nigerian nightmare at that time. They were beasts, but it was so cold. The field was frozen. They couldn't run. We couldn't run. We get out with a win. We go to Pittsburgh, and that was one game I felt good about. Like, all right, we can beat these guys, and we had a chance, and we didn't get it done. If we get one first down in the fourth quarter right at the end of the game's over, and we don't get it. And that's when I wish Marshall Faulk wouldn't have got hurt. He got hurt in the first playoff game.
Dang.
Limped out of it after about a 19-yard run. And that's a shame, because we could have used them. So then we punt. Pittsburgh scores real quick. We get the ball back. We throw a Hail Mary to Aaron Bailey, Louisville boy. Looked like he caught it running down there, and then they waved it off. And pretty exciting, historic game. But didn't quite get there. But that team was awesome. We had no Pro Bowl players on the defense. And Harbaugh made the Pro Bowl. Marshall Faulk made the Pro Bowl, and I made the Pro Bowl on offense. But yet we almost went to the big game. Yeah. Well, yep. Could have, should have.
You played in a few of them, though. Three more than I did. All right, so we go through some recurring questions each week. It's fun to hear guys' answers against each other. So the first one, if all jobs in America paid the same, what would you do for a living?
Gosh, if all jobs paid the same, well, I'd probably just coach fifth and sixth grade football year-round. That's the perfect age, you know. They don't know everything yet.
Some still listen to you.
A couple of them have already played a couple of years nowadays, but the parents don't know that much either, and they're not really that into it yet. That would be a good spot, coaching kids at that age.
It's funny you say fifth and sixth after coaching high school football for a few years. It's funny that you would go back that far. What's your favorite book?
My favorite book, God. I don't know. I read a lot of stuff for work, so I haven't really read a book. Well, I haven't really read a book I wanted to read in a long time, except for right now I'm reading Cornbread Mafia, and it's kind of hard. It's kind of a difficult read, but it's pretty cool because I know a lot of the families from Marion County in Kentucky and that history. So parts of it are pretty neat, but it's not an easy read. I read on vacation, I read Molly's Game.
How was that? They just did a movie on that.
Yeah, the Molly Bloom story, the girl who ran a poker game out in California and moved it to New York. I can honestly say this for the first time ever. The book was so much better than the movie.
Usually you don't get that perspective.
Never. And I got to tell you, that's true. The movie was hard to hear everything, one. And two, you know, the movie left everybody's names out. I guess they were worried about getting sued. So in the book, they're like, oh, yeah, Tobey Maguire was, you know, basically running this poker game, and this girl started helping him with it, and Leonardo DiCaprio would show up, and these guys would play on Tuesday nights, and everybody would bring a ton of money and have at it for about 7 hours, and everybody would leave. And this girl just took over the game and started, you know, setting it up in nice places and providing food and, you know, getting a nice, you know, automatic card shuffler and whatever, and her tips were just enormous. They went from $1,000 of tips to tens of thousands of dollars of tips to where she was making a ton of money. And then she moved to New York and she started taking a rake, unfortunately, which is illegal. You can do those games as long as no one takes a rake. No one makes, you know, takes the profit out of the middle. Well, she started doing that because the pots were so huge. She was trying to protect herself because she's handling money in and out when people get there, doing it all. And no, the book was great, and it's a very easy read. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, the first time I ever got to do that was Lone Survivor, and I feel like anytime anyone brings up the movie, I have to say, and I hate saying it, but it's only
feel like such
at
a
the
goof.
Time that was like one of the first books that I read.
Yeah, what a
Lone
stroke!
Survivor. Yeah, and then, it is true. I get it now. What's the biggest lesson you've learned through the transition into so now Will is my financial advisor, so that is his full career transition, NFL football player, end game financial advisor. What's the biggest lesson you've learned along that journey?
Find yourself a home, and if you make a mistake, feel free to move on. I would still be doing radio if in 2009 the Great Recession hits, that Valvano and myself, we show up and all of a sudden our radio station's automated country rock because they just crap canned our feed, and we had nowhere to get on the air. So I spent 6 months trying to get back on the air with the Bob and Will Show because we had our sponsors. We just could not get airtime anywhere, and everyone was so scared because it was a scary time. I mean, the Great Recession, I'll probably never live through it again. You might because you're young, but I probably won't. But then I'm like, you know, when I was in Buffalo after my first year, it was so difficult. I started taking classes through the mail with the University of Denver to become a certified financial planner. I'm like, that needs to be my backup. One thing I always knew is the NFL was not for long. Have a backup plan. So I started doing that. And then my second year in the NFL, I had a really good year and played well. So I'm like, all right, you know, that's on hold. Plus, trying to read those financial books, good luck. That was not a whole lot of fun. But I've always had interest in the stock market. My second year in the league in 87 was the 87 crash, Black Monday. The market goes down 22.8% in one day.
Jeez.
And at that time, I was just a second year player. I didn't have a whole lot of money. I had no exposure to the market, but a lot of older guys did. And boy, I watched, they panicked and they all sold when they shouldn't have been selling. And then by Christmas that year, the market recovered. But that's the first time I started buying stock was after that. I'm like, well, what is this? I'm going to get one. So I opened up an account with Shearson Lehman. Ken Hull hooked me up with a guy that he knew from his days of playing in New Jersey, the New Jersey Generals. And I enjoyed that. And then I figured, you know, before I went to work as a full-time as a stockbroker, I thought, you know, I know this pretty well. And then I've learned a ton. You know, when I made that move in 2009, I've learned so much. You know, you study and take the Series 7 and you study and take the Series 66, you learn a whole lot of stuff along the way. I wish the NFL was a publicly traded company, because there, I think then many players would learn so much more about the market and not be afraid of it, and would do a whole lot better with their money with it. Because the stats are staggering that, you know, players 5 years out of league or, you know, 80% of them are bankrupt or whatever. I think it's getting better.
But, I actually heard it's getting worse. But
that's a shame.
But there's a thing on those stats, because they're saying all NFL players. They're not saying vested players. They're
right.
not saying guys that played X amount of years. So, you know, it's not necessarily your guys that are playing 10 years that are broke. These guys are coming in now. Now, rookie minimum now is $400,000. So there's not a huge excuse, but, you know, it's tough, and everyone's got their hand out. And whether it's family or whether it's investments, you know, people are looking for money when you get in the NFL, and a lot of these guys can't say no, which is tough. But you all do a great job, and I recommend everyone I can to give you all a shot in managing their money, because you guys are fair. You do a great job, and
I'm a lot better with your money and other people's money than my own. Because, I mean, I was crazy generous, and, you know, still am probably to a fault. I mean, you know, I've probably given away more money than I'm worth, and certainly by the time I die, we'll have. I think I bought every meal for everyone I've ever went to dinner with up until just a couple of years ago. I just did. I mean, I was on a number of different boards, and I wrote checks to everybody. It's a shame my career didn't last longer. I could still just give a whole bunch of it out.
You buy my meals now, but it's a write-off now that I'm working with you. Hey, the Bible says a generous person will prosper, and I've heard many sermons about God's math, and you can't outgive them. And you know what? Sometimes buying a meal for somebody is the best thing you can do, because you're giving them your time and your treasure. And I've heard that along the way, and you modeled it for me earlier in my career, and I always try and buy meals for guys. And as I got later in my years in the NFL, I learned that if I bought rookies a meal before they bought me one, man, they listened to you a whole lot more, because
right.
then you're not that jerk veteran saying, hey, you know, it's rookie night. Hey, it's a road trip. Buy me something. I would try and buy them a meal first. And it wasn't a selfish ploy. It was a, man, there's going to be a Sunday early in the year, and I'm going to jump this dude for a mistake, and I really don't want him to shut down on me. And kind of the current culture of kids, we don't need to get too far off on a tangent, but you got to build some trust with guys these days.
And back when I played, it was a little bit easier, I think. You know, the money wasn't as much. We were kind of all in the same boat. The one thing I loved about training camp, the off-season guys are wearing their Bills shirts or whatever, and they're peacocking around town and blah, blah, blah. But you get the training camp, everybody's equal. You get the
right.
You know, there was no guarantee back then. I mean, nowadays the contracts are so front-loaded or whatever, but back then there really wasn't. Other than a handful of players, you had to make that team every year, and it made training camps very competitive, but it was very humbling, and everybody was the same. You know, there was no, hey, look at me going on. It was just trying to get it done. Crazy competitive, but it was good. It was great team competition, because we had such a nucleus. I was more worried about what Kent and Jimmy Richer and Jim Kelly and Thurman and all the other guys I played with, I was more worried about what they thought about a mistake that I would make, much more than the coaches or any announcer or whatever. I was just worried, man, I'm letting my guys down.
Right. I got to that point in my career too, and I think that's when you start to play winning football, when you're kind of past the financials, you're past everything else. You know, guys on their first contract and guys young in their career, a lot of times they're trying to get to that second contract and they're worried about them. And I had a conversation with Doug Marrone one time. It's like, you need to rely on a core of veterans that are worried about winning a Super Bowl. And you get some guys that are wise beyond their years early in their game. I don't want to characterize an entire rookie or first, second, third year players, but those guys need to get paid. You know, they need to look out for them. They're still on that independent contractor mindset. And you get later and you want to get a ring. You want to leave a legacy.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I have a nephew who's with the Rams right now. And I told him, I said, listen, for a while, you have enough friends. You're business 24/7. You're under the microscope 24/7. You do everything you can to give yourself the best shot to make this team. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But the only way you can give the best shot is just go in there and get it done. And it was nice that once I left Buffalo, I was financially independent, that, You know, I could become a much better leader. You know, I was a captain of the team in Indy, and but my first couple of years, it was survival, and the money again. The money was good. The money's always been good. It's all kind of relative, but it's sure by the end of my career, it was lottery type money to where you really could. All right, I'm financially independent now, and I can relax a little bit and seek out a winner. And I almost got there. You know, I almost got the Super Bowl with the Colts. I almost got the Super Bowl with the Steelers because that became my obsession at the end. And one regret, didn't get back to the Super Bowl, didn't win one. But I think I was in the playoffs 9 out of 13 years. So wow. That wasn't all bad.
A lot of bonus games. Yeah. But I hope Johnny Wolford's listening to this podcast or tunes in because
Johnny's the man.
You have the biggest – your Uncle Will is the biggest fan of yours. I've gotten more – AAF updates, how you're doing, and I wish you the best with the Rams. What a staff you're on. Got to meet your coach, Sean McVay, and your GM at the Derby, and they are absolutely phenomenal. Your O-line coach, Aaron Cromer, you know, I think he's the best in the business. I'm very excited about your opportunity out there.
Let me just say this real quick. I just want to thank Bill Polian drafted me back in the day when I was his first draft class, and, you know, everybody loves Bill. But Bill had a lot to do with the AAF, and it gave Johnny a chance to play. And, I mean, I'd never enjoyed something in a long time as to watching him play on TV. And I went to a couple of the games, and thank you, Bill, for giving a number of kids an opportunity, because I think almost 100 kids out of the league have now signed with teams, and we'll get a look. You know, Johnny didn't get a look last year. Started 47 games for Wake Forest. He started every game in high school. You know, unfortunately, he's not 6'4 and playing quarterback, but this year he's getting a real look, so very thankful for that.
Yeah, that league is necessary. You know, it might be called something different. You know, maybe the XFL is that answer, but there needs to be a league out there where there's real film that compares to NFL film, not Canadian ball, not arena ball, real film that these guys can develop, because the colleges are so different than NFL now that – especially O linemen and quarterbacks can't develop in time, and then you're seeing all these vets just string out and sit around, and then you have the underdeveloped youth in those positions, and you either got to keep guys on as projects, and then, man, if that's your second quarterback or even third, you might run into a bind in the year. And on the O line, you're only keeping 8 or 9. If you only get 1 or 2 injuries on the O-line, that's an absolute blessing in a season. So it's really even tough to keep a project player around.
No doubt, especially O-line. I mean, it'd be nice to give kids another year or two to develop, because it takes that long. My first year, I was not shaving in the NFL. I weighed about 270. I looked like I was 12. And then my second year, just 1 year of experience, 1 year older, it was just a night and day difference. So no doubt about it. And I do think the XFL will have a real chance. I think there's a market for football in the offseason. There's enough people that want to watch, want to go, and pay attention to it. It just has to be done correctly. The AAF had a big opportunity, and it just blew up. But without trying, their ratings on TV were pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. Outdrawn NBA games, and they didn't. It's not like they advertised it on the front end. People are just like, oh, my God, what's this a game's on? What is it? Well, the XFL, they're coming out blazing. I wish them the best.
Yeah, and sports gambling will help them. So sports gambling is gaining steam. That'll help these leagues. I would love for the NFL to get behind one financially and make it last. But we'll hop into the rapid-fire questions. These can be quick answers, but these are fun. You're kind of a sweet spot guest, because most of our audience so far has been Louisville and Buffalo area people tuning in. You have ties to both. So normally I ask, what's your favorite restaurant in a particular city? We got to get Louisville, and we have to get Buffalo.
Sure. Buffalo was easy. Elio DiPaolo's and For the people who remember Elio, he was awesome, and Dennis has done such a wonderful job with it. And now with Elio Jr., easily my number one place there. And I really didn't go to a whole lot of other places, to be honest, so I'm sure there's plenty of other places to go to, but mine was Elio's. And in Louisville, Pat's Steakhouse, easily number one for me. Great filet, family style with the vegetables, which I love them all. That's where we had our rehearsal dinner.
So did we.
My wife and myself way back when, and now I'm a big fan of Pat's.
That's great. Who was your favorite teammate throughout your career?
Oh, Ken Hall, easily. He was just two peas in a pod, man. I miss them every day.
That's awesome. What was your first car?
A Bronco 2 Silver. I paid $13,335 for it because I think it listed for about 15 and change. And the guy was stunned that a football player just wouldn't say yes. And I'm like, no, I'm not paying the list price. And it was a stick shift because for some reason I thought that would be a good idea in Buffalo. So a Bronco 2 stick shift, and I had it for about 3 years until I got a big Bronco, big old white one like OJ.
Nice. So that was your first car? You didn't drive anything prior?
No, I didn't have any money. didn't have a car.
You never had the experience of driving. Never had a beater car.
Down in Vandy, I never had a car. A couple friends of mine had cars. We didn't go anywhere. We just walked. Well, Vanderbilt's real close to downtown, although back then downtown didn't exist. That place has changed night and day.
For sure. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
Well, considering I updated my phone about a year plus ago and it dropped a ton of contacts, including all those kids I coached at St. X, they are all wiped out of my phone.
That's Will's excuse for when you text him.
Oh, it's terrible. I'm like, sorry, I don't know who you are. I saw Mike Vrabel, the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. I played with Mike in Pittsburgh, and he's like, well, you know, he has my phone number. I'm like, Mike, give me your number. So I got Mike's, Frank Reich, all the Buffalo guys.
I mean, Jim Kelly's about as famous as
Jim Kelly, Bruce Thurman. I'm on those guys' tech chain. I used to have Peyton Manning's. It's gone. Somehow I still have Jeff Saturday's. But all football and sports people. I don't think I really have anybody besides that, no actresses or anything. I don't have Jennifer Lawrence's, unfortunately. J-Law, she's a good old Louisville girl. Doing some good things.
She is. I should say, besides cleaning the bar, what was your first job?
Gosh. Outside of that, right after my senior year in high school, I went out to Hermitage Farm and baled hay for about a month. I go out with my buddy Deacon Millis. His dad sets us up with the job. So we go out there, and baling hay is not easy. It is very hard work. It eats you up. It tears your skin up. I mean, you got to wear – it's hotter than hell, but you got to wear long sleeves and long pants because they eat you alive. So we go out for day one, and, I mean, it's hard. And I'm one of the bigger ones and stronger ones, so I'm the only one who can throw the wire bales where they don't make the bales of hay themselves. They bring them in on semis where they weigh twice as much. I'm the only one who can throw it over their heads because they're like 100 pounds.
Dang.
Horrible work. So day two, I go out there, and it's just me. Deacon Mills blows it off, quits, gets another job somewhere else, probably doing nothing. But I worked that job for a solid month because they were paying me about $3.75 an hour, not taking taxes out. It was awesome.
Not a bad gig. What's your favorite movie?
Golly. That's a tough one. God, I really couldn't say right now. I haven't been to a whole lot of movies lately. Way back when, probably Caddyshack. I mean, that was just such a classic movie that, you know, there haven't been a whole lot of movies I've gone to more than once. And I think I've seen Caddyshack a couple hundred times. So that has to be in the top five or so.
And we get Bill Murray in town now with Luke coaching our basketball team.
I know. I need to meet him. I think I'd be nervous. He'd
be starstruck.
No, God, yeah.
That's awesome. That's all I got for you. Where can guys find you on social media?
I don't do it a whole lot. I'm on Twitter, and I don't even know. I think just Will Wolford on Twitter somewhere. I'm on Facebook, but I don't do much on Facebook. I'm not on anything else.
I love it.
I'm not a huge fan of social media. Maybe I'll get into it a little bit more. I think coaching high school kids and just spending way too much time policing kids on social media because they have no idea what they're doing and they don't realize it. Once you hit that send tweet button, it's out there for everybody to see.
And there's companies that can track stuff you delete. So even if you put something out and delete it while you're in high school,
it's so hard.
There's your warning.
It's so hard for a high school kid to really think you're not lying to them in that situation. Like, you don't understand. Vanderbilt's recruiting you now. They're going to follow you on social media. If you retweet stuff about marijuana, smoking, whatever, they're not going to think it's funny, even though you think it's funny and your friends are liking it. Don't. And you know what? I don't know. Don't listen to me. What do I know?
Right.
Stay out of my private life. I'm like, you idiot. It's not private. That's right. What I'm trying to tell you. No. Not a big fan of social media.
Well, Willie, I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been awesome to become one of your best friends over these years. I've heard you describe me on Pat Moran's podcast like the son you never had and one of your best friends. And that seems like an accurate description. I come to you for advice, but I also come to hang out. You know, we hang out and have bourbon and go on trips together. We go to ball games together. It's been a blast. I appreciate you coming on the show because talking about transitions in my first, you know, coming off of my first year out, you're one of the guys that helped me the most when I said, "Well, I don't know what to do with myself. I don't have a purpose right now. I get in this who gives a crap mode, and I don't know what to do with myself." And you're one of the guys that kind of said, you know, here's what you need to do. I went through the same things, and that was reassuring, and that helped me with anxious thoughts of thinking I was potentially going to be stuck as a stay-at-home dad.
Well, I mean, I appreciate it. It is nice. I get to kind of relive my life through you, especially in the last, you know, your career and going back up to Buffalo and have that, and that kind of connection was always a lot of fun. I promise you, I'll always try to shoot you straight, at least what I think is straight, and keep you from making some mistakes that maybe I made and maybe steer you away from it.
And you have for the most part. I'm not as gullible as some, but I've come to you with a lot of ideas that people have brought to me, and at times your quick no is not appreciated in the moment, but then a month later, I'm thanking God I brought it across to you and Tom.
I've seen a lot, that's for sure. And believe me, I don't have all the answers, but I'm at a point where if I don't have them, I usually know where to go to get them. But there are, some pitfalls out there you have to avoid.
Good deal. Well, I appreciate it, Willie. Thanks again.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Throughout my NFL career, I worked with many custom clothing companies. Guys would come from around the country and set up shop in our facility and try and sell us clothes. And no one has compared to someone I work with locally in Louisville, Jordan Yoakum with Tom James. He is an expert concierge that can save you time. You know, I don't even have a full-time job right now, and it's hard for me to go to the mall and pick out clothes or to order something online, and it generally doesn't fit, and then I either got to go get it tailored or me and my wife got to go send it back. Put an end to that. Jordan works within a 100-mile radius of Louisville, Kentucky, and he will come to you with the clothes, and it's great. You can contact Jordan at j.yoakum@tomjames.com or visit the website tomjames.com for more info. Let Jordan create a game plan with you for your wardrobe, just like we did preparing for NFL defenses. But instead of attacking defenses, you'll be attacking your next business meeting, wedding, or derby event in style. That's j.yoakum, Y-O-C-U-M, at tomjames.com. And when you contact Jordan, make sure you tell him Eric Wood sent you. Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood, presented by Green Remedy. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.